Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, film editor for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Ken Johnson of 97.1 The Point. Thank you for being here.
I'm happy to be one of the things you don't hate.
Yeah, this is true.
I'm assuming. That's great. Yes.
It's a small list, but you are on it.
Yay.
So lucky you. So we'll start this week with The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Quite yeah.
The mouthful of a title there. The new film from Terry Gilliam. And Terry Gilliam, I think it seems like he's almost better known for the problems that he encounters with making his movies than he is known for the movies themselves over the last decade or
yeah,
so.
Yeah,
yeah. There was the Don Quixote movie that he never made that they made a documentary about instead, Lost in La Mancha, which was fascinating. And he's battled with studios. And on this film, Heath Ledger, who is one of the main stars, of course, passed away during the filming of this movie. And so wasn't able to complete it, and there was a lot of speculation about what would happen, and eventually they got Johnny Depp and Colin Farrell and Jude Law to sort of fill in a way that I thought made sense, which
yeah.
was interesting, that despite this unexpected problem, that they managed to tie it all together. And I kind of thought this film worked. It's about a traveling sideshow circus thing, I guess you would call it. Led by Dr. Parnassus, who's played by Christopher Plummer.
Right.
And he's made a deal with the devil, who's played by Tom Waits, and his daughter is going to be given to the devil at age 16 unless Dr. Parnassus can. It's not entirely clear what exactly he does. He saves the souls, or he convinces them not to be taken by the devil or something. Anyway, he has to do this in order to save his daughter.
All I knew is he had a bet with the devil for the number of souls they would either reap or save or something. And
something
yeah,
like
there
that.
Was a going, there was a running bet. Now, don't you always find that titles like The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus sort of have so much weight and so much clunkiness that you almost dread the fact that the film you're going to see has that title because it could be just awful.
It could have been. It could have been like Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium.
Thank you. Yeah.
Like
oh, the worst.
Not the worst, but certainly not good.
Yes, yeah. it was not good at all. But you have to admire Terry Gilliam. All those problems that he has shows that his reach sometimes exceeds his grasp, but at least he's reaching. So many filmmakers get so lazy. It's nice to see someone with a vision that sometimes cannot be realized.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I like Terry Gilliam a lot. I mean, I think he's made some really excellent films, Brazil,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Monkeys,
sure.
and Adventures of Baron Munchausen, and even his last couple films that have been not that well received, Tideland and The Brothers Grimm.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, and I think he always has a vision, and he definitely has a vision here too, even if the story is a little muddled and sort of unclear at times. The imagination that's on display here, the Imaginarium of Terry Gilliam, is really impressive, I think. And the fantasy sequences, when they go into the actual Imaginarium, which is the mind of Dr. Parnassus, I think, is what it's meant to
be. Going through a mirror gets you in his brain?
Right.
All right,
yeah.
I'll buy
sure,
that.
Right, why not?
Yeah, why not?
It doesn't really, and it's not even, it's like this sort of just plastic sheet. And it's kind of low budget.
It's really tacky on the outside, but they say, stay away from the mirror. Don't go in the mirror. How many times do I have to tell you? And it was really, you know, because the ramifications of doing so were rather great. But, you know, this actually happened to me when I saw this same screening.
No,
nothing that great. But I had actually forgotten. I knew Heath Ledger was in this, but I'd forgotten that he was not able to film some of it. And
right.
so all of a sudden, I lean over to my friend Jeff, and I say to him, God, he looks exactly like Johnny Depp now, thinking that for some reason the lighting or the makeup had made him. Doesn't he look exactly?
Amazing
he says,
special effects.
And he went along with me thinking I was kidding. And he said, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. But then I realized when he looked exactly like Jude Law and then exactly like Colin Farrell, this is really an interesting way to do this. And it
yeah.
did work for me, too, because after all, if you can accept the changing of the Darrens in Bewitched, then you can accept this.
Well, and in Bewitched, they didn't even try to explain it to you. And
no,
it,
I know.
Which was really insulting.
well,
but at least here, there's sort of an in-story reason that it makes sense. It's not just like all of a sudden in the middle of the movie we change actors.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time Heath Ledger's character goes through that mirror and into the Imaginarium, He becomes sort of a slightly different person.
Right.
He notices that he looks different.
Mm-hmm.
And because the movie is so fanciful and fantastical and everything, it does make sense.
It works. Yeah.
And all those other actors, I mean, that's got to be a really thankless job to kind of step in and be like, okay, this guy is dead, this beloved actor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tragedy. And now you have to kind of step into his shoes. That's got to be a really difficult thing to do. And they all did a good job. I think they played the character, was consistent. The character seemed like the same person, but with little twists. And I thought that worked.
And I'm sure they all thought that in doing so, in taking this thankless role, I will be able to bring Heath's last role to the screen. You know,
right. Yeah. And
otherwise, it wouldn't have happened.
It's really nice to see that the last thing that he did is able to come to fruition.
Yeah.
And it's a creative, it's fun. It's a fun, entertaining movie to watch. I think a lot of the special effects stuff in the Imaginarium recalls some of the stuff that Terry Gilliam did with Monty Python with animation back when he was in Monty Python. And it has that sort of absurd tone to it.
There was one pastoral scene in particular where the trees were so rounded and everything looked so Python, I expected a foot to come down, but it did not.
Well, and that would have been
It would have been great, sure.
It would have fit. So, yeah, I mean, just the plot is a little, you might be sort of wondering what is happening or why these things are happening at certain points. But it's still fun to watch, I think, all the way through.
I'll tell you a dark secret about myself, I don't understand why this is. I love science fiction. The Alien Quadrilogy, I'm down with it. I love 2001 years ago and still do. And anything in outer space, I love. Fantasy, don't like. And I can't understand why. It's just the same kind of stuff, but on Earth.
No Lord of the Rings movies?
I hate Lord of the Rings movies. Yeah, I don't like them at all. My dad loved the books, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll check it out, you know, especially The Hobbit he loved. But sorry, Dad, I didn't like, and I don't like fantasy. This, I didn't mind so much.
Yeah, well, it's less the sort of elves and dragons kind of fantasy, and it's more of a urban fantasy, I guess you could call it. I mean, a lot of it takes place in the real world where they're not in the Imaginarium and it's modern times.
And sometimes the fantasy movies are so complicated, I just don't have time anymore to memorize entire worlds and their structures. And
right.
I barely can wrap my head around this one, you know what I'm saying? So
you don't want to get the sort of the whole elf culture.
Right, right. I really don't care.
No, I mean, this movie isn't complicated. Sometimes it's sort of, it's confusing only in that you're not sure what they're trying to do, but it's not convoluted or anything like that.
No, it was enjoyable.
Yeah, it's definitely enjoyable. I give it 3 out of 5 stars. I think it's worth checking out.
I concur.
So, also opening this week is on a completely different tip, Youth in Revolt, the sort of, I guess you could call it a sex comedy, teen sex comedy.
Yeah.
With Michael Cera, playing the Michael Cera role, the same sort of stuff that he's done a lot. He's the awkward, sort of virginal teenager, and here he is in love with Sheeny Saunders, played by Portia Doubleday, who's a relatively unknown actress, but does a nice job in this film. And they fall in love, but circumstances keep them apart, and so Michael Cera's character is going to do whatever he can to be with the love of his life, which includes lots and lots of illegal and deviant behavior. And because he's so timid, he creates this sort of alter ego for himself called Francois, who's very suave.
Francois Dillinger,
which is no one's name ever.
No.
But that's his idea of a sophisticated, suave guy with these really tight pants and a little pencil-thin mustache. And this is a fun movie, I think. It does seem familiar in that Michael Cera has played this part a lot.
Uh-huh.
And the tone, I think, is very 80s, I found, the tone of this film. It reminded me of, like, Better Off Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Or One Crazy Summer, the Savage Steve Holland movies. It has little animated sort of segues and little sequences. But I was entertained at this film. It's not great or groundbreaking, but it's fun to watch.
You seem shocked that you didn't hate it, and
I am, actually.
The name of the podcast, there you go. You know, I was this character in high school, plus fat, which you don't want to be. And the only thing that Michael Cera has going for him that I never had is the quick on his feet. Of course, the script helps, having a really well-written script. I mean, he's always funny, ironic, sarcastic, hilarious. It was a wonderful script. It kept me laughing, you know, all the little things he'd dish out all over the place. And then especially when his alter ego came, he did some good dishing too. I, you know, the whole thing, like, this dreamboat guy who is his nemesis is blocking his way. He wants to run so the cops don't arrest him. And he says, if you could please move that adorable sweater out of my way. You know, it's just stuff like that is hilarious. And, you know, you got to love that hot girl, too. So
well,
I was happy.
Yeah, she's certainly a good-looking young lady.
Yeah.
And I mean, a good actress, too, I think. Especially because a lot of the time, I mean, they fall in love and then they're apart. And you have to believe that he will do anything for this girl.
Yeah.
And she does a good job, I think, of making it someone that you can believe he'll do anything to be with her.
She said provocatively sexy things. And I'll tell you, if anyone had ever asked me to rub lotion on her exposed parts when on the beach, I would have died and gone to heaven right then.
Yeah, well, he turns out to be a lucky kid.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is funny. I mean, I think the device with Francois sort of, it doesn't work as well as I hoped it would, I think, because it sometimes seems unclear as to, like, what is Francois?
Right.
You know, is he a figment of the kid's imagination? Is he almost, he sort of, like, does some stuff on his own?
Yeah.
And it's never quite consistent, I think, and then at the end, Francois just kind of wanders off.
And it's so, yeah, exactly. It's so separate, too, in his mind that when he gets to the point where he's almost pitched, he's pitched this girl, for, you know, let's get together, and he's almost sealed the deal. And she says, you want to do that? And like in the commercial, he says, tell her yes.
Right.
You know, it's like a whole different person.
But it's a little, it's like, okay, well, who is he saying that or is he not saying that? So I don't know. I thought maybe.
I didn't care. I just wanted him to tell her yes.
Right. Well, I mean, and it was funny. That moment is funny.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a little less clear than it could have been, but overall, I think this is a fun movie.
It's a very funny movie, and I will tell you this is one of the most blatant cases of the trailer not doing a whit of justice to it, not a lick. I mean, really, if you even mildly are amused by the trailer, you're going to love the movie. It's so much better than the trailer, and I enjoyed the cameos too, or the guest spots by Ray Liotta and Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Yeah, there are a lot of funny people in this movie who have small parts like that. I mean, Fred Willard and Steve Buscemi and Gene Smart.
I totally forgot Buscemi. Yeah.
All of the small roles in this movie end up being really strong comedic actors, I think. And sometimes they're not given that much to do, but it's nice to see them anyway. And
some really nice stop motion animation in a couple of segments too.
Right. Yeah. The animation is, I mean, that was one thing that reminded me a lot of Savage Steve Holland. And I liked that about it. It was very throwbacky and it kind of, it breaks things up a little and it gives you a little variety. And yeah, it's absolutely a fun movie. And this is a movie that it's been on the shelf for like a really long time. I think they shot this movie in 2008 maybe. And that usually is a bad sign, but I think don't pay attention to that. It's still fun. It's worth seeing. And it's an entertaining
good stuff
time at the movies. So I give that 3 out of 5 stars as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth checking out. But absolutely not worth checking out this week is a movie that Ken was lucky enough not to have to see. Leap Year, the awful romantic comedy with Amy Adams and Matthew Good, where Amy Adams plays one of those only in the movies jobs where she is a real estate stager. And maybe this is a real thing, but if it's real, it's probably something that like two people do. And her job is she goes to apartments that are being sold and she sort of decorates them and puts furniture in them and so that they can be sold so that they look homey and then removes all the furniture.
Yeah.
And this is her job. And it's one of those things that seems like it's indicative of the tone of the movie, that it seems so false and contrived and it's made up only so she can seem sort of stuck up and false so that when she goes to Ireland, she's going to propose to her boyfriend on February 29th. She gets sidetracked and this simple Irish guy has to help her get to her boyfriend and he's so uncouth and he's not sophisticated at all.
I would never have guessed they'd get together.
But he's going to show her the true meaning of whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's awful. And the thing that I hate about this movie is that these are both horrible people. I mean, she's made out to be, she's arrogant, she's stuck up, she has this ridiculous job, she's condescending. And then he is all smug and he's mean to her. And then you're supposed to be happy that they fall in love. And it's just so unpleasant to watch. And the most predictable thing in the world. So just this is the kind of movie that this time of year is absolutely indicative of its quality. That
sure.
They're just dumping this out here. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of talent. Amy Adams, Academy Award nominated multiple times.
Yeah.
Excellent actress. Totally wasted in this movie. Do not see Leap Year.
Well, Sandra Bullock is a fairly good actress, too, especially this year. But that first misstep, what was the name of that movie she did? It's about Steve.
All About Steve.
Oh, my God.
I didn't see that, but...
Give it 10 minutes. That's all you'll be able to give it. Guarantee.
Yeah, I mean, The Proposal was also, I thought, awful. And that movie made a ton of money.
I know. But compared to the Steve movie, The Proposal is like Citizen Kane. Wow. Seriously. Yeah.
Well, this one, I don't know. This was definitely worse than The Proposal, I thought. I don't know about All About Steve, but hopefully I will not ever have to know.
I want you to watch it now with all my every fiber of my being. I got to hear what you think of that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's bad.
I'll have to check it out, perhaps. So also, speaking of better movies, coming up on DVD on Tuesday is the movie that Ken and I, as members of the Las Vegas Film Critics Society, helped vote as Best Picture of the Year, which was The Hurt Locker.
Man, that's a good one. A lot of explosions in it, a lot of tension. I mean, as the Fish and Magician would say, it blowed up real good. It really did.
Yeah, it's an excellent action movie and just a really smart character study, I think, and really... insightful about soldiers and the tension between wanting to go home and being sort of lost in war in the battlefield and stuff like that. And so it's definitely one I think that a lot of people did see, thankfully, because it had a lot of attention. But if you didn't see it, it'll be available on DVD. It's probably going to get a bunch of Academy Award nominations.
I think it's
something that definitely that people should catch up with.
And it's so, you're so on edge and everything. There's this one scene that I can remember in particular where somebody spots with his eagle eyes, really, this fuse to a bomb in the ground. And so the guy pulls it up and six other fuses with it. And there he's standing in the middle of nowhere. And how is he ever going to get out? It's that kind of tension. Yeah. It's great.
It's very suspenseful. And that's what's good about it is that it's not just some movie that's lecturing you about the evils of war.
Nothing like that in the whole thing,
It's a very exciting action movie
and
well acted and everything and very cool. It wasn't my favorite movie of the year, but I was happy to see it win that top award, and I'll be happy to see it win Best Picture if it does, which I think it has a very good chance to.
Exactly.
So check that out on DVD. And one other thing coming out on DVD on Tuesday that I want to recommend personally is Moon with Sam Rockwell. Which is an excellent science fiction movie. If you like 2001, and that sort of cerebral science fiction that they did in the 60s and 70s, definitely check out Moon.
Sam Rockwell
is awesome. He's basically the only person in the movie. Plays this guy on a mining base on the moon, and there's something goes wrong. And I don't want to give too much away because there's a lot of twists and turns that go on in the plot. But excellent performance. Really smart, twisty plot. It's not an action movie, but it definitely is suspenseful.
Very cool.
And there's been a little outcry online from the director of this movie, Duncan Jones, because he's pissed that the studio has not sent out screeners for awards consideration of this movie.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people didn't see it. But I think Sam Rockwell especially deserves consideration for acting awards and stuff. And it doesn't look like that's going to happen, but I hope people will check this movie out.
I'll have to go see if Redbox will give it any respect.
There you go. Yeah,
if not Netflix, then we'll see.
Right. It's definitely worth, seeking out, I think. So
good.
Moon and The Hurt Locker on DVD on Tuesday. And check out Dr. Parnassus and Youth in Revolt in theaters. Both of those, I think, pleasant surprises.
Yeah.
Definitely worth seeing. So thank you to Ken Johnson for joining me this
time week. Has flown again. I have so much fun here. Invite me back anytime.
I absolutely will.
All right.
And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except